Hi there, this is Alvin, and welcome to the Kickstart Commerce Podcast, where we share search marketing and domain name investing strategies to help grow your business. In today's episode, our guest is none other than Trevor Page, a software engineer turned entrepreneur of howtoprogramwithjava.com, an educational website dedicated to instructing and creating Java tutorials so easy a 10-year-old could do it. Although not a domain investor, today Trevor and I discuss lessons learned about operating an exact match domain. So with that, Trevor, welcome, and thank you for making time to join us today.
Always a pleasure. Can't wait to do it.
Definitely. So to kick things off here, tell the listeners a bit about yourself, who you are, and what you do.
Sure. So like you said, I'm a little bit maybe a divergence from your normal audience or interviewee, if you will. So I got my start, like you said, as a programmer. I have a background in programming and technology, worked professionally as a programmer, and then I got the calling. I was bit by the entrepreneurial bug and decided to leave my nice, cushy job as a programmer to start my own business teaching people how to code. The short story there is, while I was working in my professional career as a programmer, people kept noting about my junior level developers who were working sort of under me or with me. They were progressing very quickly in their knowledge, and they kept pointing it out and saying, what's going on here? And I realized I'm actually a really good teacher. I was teaching these people so well that they were getting up to speed so quickly and becoming productive members of the team that it was actually remarkable. So they were talking about it, and I said, oh, apparently I'm a good teacher. And the joke I always say is that my mom always said I was a good teacher and that I should be a teacher, but of course your mom's going to say good things about you. So I always ignored her. Anyway, right. Long story short, I became a teacher for programming. Now I have the domain name, like you said, howtoprogramwithjava.com, and I built a business on it.
So how long ago was that in terms of time? What kind of timeline we're working with?
Yep. Not that I was counting, but it was October 15th, 2012 when I quit my job, and I started the site in July of 2012. So shortly after I started it, I actually decided to quit my job, which I would not recommend. If any of your listeners are listening, that is not a good idea. I was very hasty. I should have stayed a little bit longer and saved up a little bit more of a nest egg before I jumped ship. But I don't regret it. So.
And so what was that like? Obviously you built everything up from July to October, but when you jumped ship, I mean, what did you feel like?
What did I feel like?
Yeah,
it was very exciting. I think that's the best way to describe it, is exciting.
Right.
But it very quickly turned to fear because obviously, so I was living, are you in the States, I assume?
Yes.
Yeah. So I lived in Toronto, Canada, which if you're not familiar, it's very expensive to live there. It's a very large city, and prices were terrible for rent. So I think I was paying somewhere upwards of $2,500 a month in rent, plus all the rest of living expenses. And I hadn't factored in my business expenses when I was calculating everything. That was a big mistake. So I had to spend a lot of my personal expenditures into my business, because you need to spend money to make a business grow. So I very quickly ran out of cash. So I very quickly turned from excitement to complete terror as I emptied out my bank account and then, maxed out, like you've heard it before, max out your credit cards, you empty for us it's called RRSP. For you guys, it's a 401k.
Right.
It was bad. and it took years. It took years to eventually get to the point where I was back up and running to where I used to be. So, my best description of it was excitement to sheer terror.
Wow. Yeah. Wow. So then backing up then even, so, I mean, what led you to launch, how to program with java.com?
So, yeah, I think, a lot of people talk about these moments where they wrote something on the back of a napkin and that kind of thing. And actually my story has a very similar start. I was sitting at my desk and I ran into a problem while I was working in my day job. I ran into a problem, a programming problem that I couldn't solve. And I was, Googling around trying to find people who were solving this. And then website after website that I found from people trying to teach me how to solve this problem, they were just doing a horrible, horrible job. So I sketched down on this piece of paper sort of my fundamental rules for, a good tutorial type website. I can't specifically remember what I wrote down, but I know it was one of the lines on the piece of paper was never assume your audience knows something or something along those lines. And that was what I always ran into with these other sites, was they always assumed that you knew something that you didn't know. So you were completely lost. So I said, never again, if I'm going to go in and do this and teach myself, I'm going to make sure that I never make an assumption with what someone could or could not know. And that's what I would build the foundation of my website on. So I actually wrote down a piece of paper and I stared at that for a while. And then I said, you know what, let's start writing, because that's the best thing I could do. So I bought the domain name and I started just writing articles.
So did you take any time like to research the domain name, or did you already just know like in your mind that you wanted it to be how to program with Java.com?
That's a very, very good question, because yes, I did do some research. I discovered another podcast, a couple on, you know, how to start a business, that type of thing. Right. I think it was it Pat Flynn's blog, not blog. Anyway, there's a gentleman by the name of Pat Flynn.
Yeah, Smart Passive Income.
You're aware of it. There you go.
Yeah.
So I, on his site, he recommended at the time using some sort of a keyword, you know, tool. I think it was Market Samurai was the keyword tool. So I was actually using Market Samurai to do some keyword research. And I think that's how I sort of landed on how to program with Java.com. It was sort of good in terms of, you know, it wasn't too competitive and so on and so forth. So yeah, I was sort of going in 2012, the exact match domain was sort of the way to go. So I was certainly, you know, angling my business, my domain name towards that to leverage that.
Right. And so I'm assuming that you purchased that prior to Google's update to the exact match domain.
Correct. Algorithm. Yes. You got it. Man.
So were you impacted by that update any?
Or? Thankfully, I was not. I heard a lot of, there was a lot of fear mongering that I'd heard many, many times over with what Penguin updates and this and that. And right. So with my business, with my website, the entire time I was working under the umbrella of create good quality articles that would actually be helpful to your audience first. That is the number one priority. Then you can do all the other tips and tricks and all this other stuff afterwards, but make sure you make good quality stuff first. So I always abided by that rule. And I, every time I did anything, it was always, you know, would I want to read this? Would I want to learn from this? And that's sort of the type of articles that I created. So I didn't see any sort of impact. The only impact I ended up seeing was I stopped regularly creating new content on the blog. And that led to a very gradual and slow decline in my traffic.
Ah,
yeah.
And over what period of time?
Oh, that's probably a year or two. So I think at my peak, I was doing around, I had about anywhere between 75 to maybe 85,000 unique visitors per month to my site. And now that's declined to around 45 to 50. Gotcha. So yeah, it's a pretty significant decline, but I only have myself to blame because I've been neglecting it. So that's now I've turned myself around. I've hired someone to do some writing. I'm also doing some writing. So I'm not ignoring what got me here type of thing with respect to getting the traffic. So,
right. And speaking of getting there, so, I mean, how did you get there? Like, did you market or what type of notoriety?
Podcasts helped. My biggest thing besides podcasts was I was featured on lifehacker.com. That's sort of what it sounds like. It's a blog that tells you, it gives you hacks that you can do to your own life. But Lifehacker has sort of a technology spin to it. So It was a good fit. I just randomly reached out to them and said, hey, I've got this new blog. It's free. You know, I'm not doing anything crazy on it. And it's got good information. You know, your audience might be interested. And one of the writers saw that tip. They picked it up, they checked it out, and they wrote an article about it. And to this day, it's still one of my best referrers in terms of domains to that one, you know, that one blog article on my domain. It's still my number one source of leads, my number one everything. So I'm very thankful for that. Yeah.
And that's like years after the fact. What, like 6 years, right? Or closing in on 6 years?
Yeah. So it was, I mean, when I first got it, I was, so I started the blog in July. I think it was August or September when Lifehacker wrote about me. So it was a month or two after I launched my blog in 2012 that they wrote about it. And I'm still reaping the rewards of that now. Yeah, 5-6 years later. So it's significant for sure. And then, like I said, podcasting as well, appearing on other people's podcasts. I was on the Smart Passive Income podcast as well. I was, you know, episode 40 something or 50 something. So that certainly helped as well. The backlinks from that sort of, site really helped me out as well. So I did a lot of, if you can call it marketing. I did a lot of outreach, a lot of outbound marketing to try to generate interest in this blog that I was writing. So that was probably the biggest thing that I did, other than just producing content every day. Every day I would be writing articles and articles and articles. I'd probably publish anywhere from 3 to 7 articles a week on my blog when I first started. So that was definitely a big, had a big impact on the growth of my business.
Gotcha. So that definitely boosted then just the site and its overall search friendliness.
Yeah, that's, I always say it's a long-term strategy, that it takes a year or more before that really starts to kick in. Nowadays, I don't know if you want to talk about nowadays, but I've been doing very long form content. So I've been publishing articles of 7,000 to 10,000 words per article. Wow. It's a lot of work, but I do zero research. I just pick a topic and I write about it. I don't do any SEO, keyword, nothing. I just pick a topic that I think my audience will be interested in learning about. And I write 7,000 to 10,000 words and I publish it. And then I walk away and it takes about a year. And then now I'm getting, you know, over 2,000 hits a month, just that one article that I wrote a year ago. So it's a long, long game, but, but it works.
Right. Yeah. So in terms of, you know, just how to program with java.com as a domain, like, have you noticed pros and cons to have chosen, you know, such a domain?
The most obvious, well, I'll start with the pro. The pro is that it describes exactly what it is.
Right.
So there's if you're in the space, if you know what the Java programming language is, you're going to understand the context of the domain name. So that's good. It's fairly memorable, but people type in learn how to program with Java as opposed to just how to program, you know, they'll add words or they'll substitute the with could be in. So I actually bought other domain names to anticipate that. And I got most of them. So, you know, a lot of people type in how to program in Java instead of how to program with Java, that kind of thing. So I anticipated that and got that. So the pro is, yeah, it explains what it is. The con is the word Java is actually trademarked. And that became a problem for my podcast. So I created a podcast called How to Program with Java, because that was ended up being sort of the brand. My podcast, after years of being in the iTunes store, was removed. And the only reason why it could have been removed was the third-party trademark infringement. They gave me a list of reasons, but the reasons were, you know, podcast contains explicit, you know, bad, horrible material. And nothing on the list made any sense except for the third-party trademark infringement. I said, oh no. So the one downside is, yeah, make sure you don't use trademark words in your domain names, because that could lead to something bad years down the road.
Right. So were you able to get back into iTunes or?
So yeah, well, what I did was I eventually, after a year or two, I just said, oh, let me just try to upload it again to iTunes. Let me just try to republish it and see what happens. And they took it. It's republished and it's back to being live on there. But I'm not holding my breath on that. So I don't, you know, we'll see what happens. Right. So basically what I did was I rebranded. So, my, as you had pointed out earlier in your article, I forget where I read somewhere you talked about this with respect to using Crafty Coder. That's actually my business name is Crafty Coder. So that's not, there's no trademark infringements there. I also branded another product called Coder's Campus. So these are not, there's no trademark words in there. So that's right. Something that I ended up doing to sort of hedge my bet against the fact that it might get removed again. So, yeah.
Now you mentioned, what was it? Coder's Campus. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so what, how is that different from How to Program with Java, or are they kind of like,
they're pretty much the same thing. It was pretty much the rebrand, because I'm a little paranoid now of that trademark infringement problem. Although I don't understand why that would be like my blog does not say anything negatively about the Java programming language. I do nothing but teach the programming language and I encourage people to learn it. So really it would be good for the company. I think it's Oracle who owns the Java language. So right. it only helps Oracle. So I don't know. It doesn't make a lot of sense that it would be taken down. And I think that might've just been an iTunes thing. Uh-huh. So in any case, I'm hedging my bets there and I'm saying I'm going to rebrand to something that doesn't contain that trademark infringement type word. So Coder's Campus is essentially the new brand that applies specifically to my programming audience. So that's sort of why I went that direction.
Gotcha. And is that where you spend most of your time today?
Yeah, exactly. It's a, like I said, that long form content strategy. That's what I've been doing with the this coderscampus.com website. So that's where I published that 7,000-10,000 word article a year ago, and now it's getting tons of traffic. And I'm like, okay, good. It feels good when a plan, you know, a year long plan actually pays off and shows, you know, rewards. And I anticipate it's going to grow and grow and grow over time. It's only going to get bigger and bigger. So, because I'm sure Google loves it. Yeah.
No, that's a, and that's a phenomenal name, by the way, just in my opinion, in terms of Coders Campus. I mean, that, I mean, it, it literally, it, you know, kind of evokes that, I guess you'd say, how to program, or that you're going to learn, you know, it stokes that fire. And so you also mentioned Crafty Coder. And so what's interesting about that, obviously, it's the word crafty and then coder without the E. .com. So why go with the brandable, I guess, for your company name, but then you've gone, you know, with a keyword, you know, an exact match domain for the tutorial site, as well as, I guess you'd say, a brandable, but a recognizable brandable that passes the radio test. So in terms of Crafty Coder, why did you go with it, you know, and removing the E?
Right. So why did I go with it? Well, I went with it because it was in 2015 when I used that name. So the exact match long how to program a java.com domain with the trademark infringement was 2012. So it took me 3 years to learn my lesson. So then I created the Crafty Coder, which is, yeah, a lot simpler. Now the Crafty Coder, I had to think of a name for my company. It used to operate under a different company name. I was partnered with someone from my college days, and I just needed to have a clean separation between that business and a new one. So I had to think up a new name, and my dad and I just sat down one day and we're like, okay, we got to come up with a name. What could it be? So we wanted to think of a name that represented who I am, and that sort of could be the umbrella company name for all of my endeavors. Cause I do programming, but I also, you know, I create apps, but I also teach programming. So there's a few different, verticals that I'm in. So it had to be sort of the umbrella thing. So that's how we landed on a Crafty Coder. It just kind of, you know, it felt nice. And then you have Coders Campus, which is the much more targeted at my actual audience of programmers who want to learn how to program. So that's sort of why we went those directions and whatnot. If that answers your question, hopefully that does.
Yeah, no, that makes perfect sense. So in terms of what's next, I mean, so what's next for how to program with java.com?
Yeah, so basically my main thing there is I offer a recurring revenue type product. So I offer a monthly membership program. That's what Coders Campus is. It's a monthly membership program. And I publish new videos every week in there. So that's going to continue to happen. And I probably am going to be revamping my main flagship course on the core Java programming language. So it's probably going to be updating that course, from scratch, updating it with all the new changes that have come in the programming language since, you know, 2012 when I originally published it. So that's really what's next for the business. With respect to programming, but yeah, I have a whole bunch of balls in the air right now with respect to my business overall. So, it's all a balancing act in my opinion. So
no, we're one in the same cut from the same cloth, man.
There you go.
Juggling is a way of life. So, you know, tell us, or rather share with the listeners a bit about your program and, you know, what the course is like.
Yeah. So like you mentioned at the beginning, you did your homework there. So you had a good little catchphrase that I use. It's, you know, programming so simple, a 10-year-old could do it. Right. And that's sort of something I always come back to because I started programming when I was 10. And when I first started programming, it was very difficult as a 10-year-old. That was 1993?
Wow.
The landscape in 1993, Google wasn't around and it was very difficult to learn stuff. So, my goal is to try to think about the Trevor that was 10 years old and what could I do to help him, learn programming faster. Right. So that's sort of my overarching goal with respect to teaching, my students that come through the door. So I try my very best. I've been told many times that I am a great teacher. So that's always nice to hear. I have far more good reviews than bad reviews. So that's always a good thing. I always try my best to abide by that one simple rule of never assume that they know anything, always teach as best as I can. And for some reason that's always worked out for me. So I will continue to do that.
Wow. No, that's actually good. I mean, and so what other things, obviously you have the course, you have the website there, but then what other things are you actually working on that, you know, you'd like to share?
Yeah. So, I mean, for me personally, I love to code. Like I could wake up at 6 a.m. and code from 6 a.m. to, you know, whatever, 9 p.m. I don't know why. I love it. I love it. I love it. Which I feel is a blessing, is a big blessing, because it's a very useful skill to have. So right. Basically what I do outside of my teaching, I solve my own business problems. So anytime there's a problem that comes up in my business, I say, God, I wish there was a better solution out there for that. So that's one of my latest distractions, if you will, with, you know, creating apps and whatnot. I've created a little program to help increase my conversion rates on my blog when it comes to getting new leads, so getting new email addresses. I've been struggling to get a 2% conversion rate on my blog for quite a while. I always wanted to hit 2% because that's sort of the average. On average, people can convert about 2% of their blog's traffic into lead. Right. I was always hovering around 1.8 to 1.9%. So I said, how can I solve this problem? So I combined a few different things together in a piece of software and tested it out on my own site and saw that I went from around 1.8% conversion rate to around 4.7. So I blew right past that 2% mark. And I said, oh my God, what did I do? Like, why is this so impactful? Why is this working so well? So I created this piece of software called Lead Nibbler, which again, my dad came up with that name. I thought it was cute. I said, oh, I like that one. Let's go with Lead Nibbler. so it essentially, it combines a couple things. It combines the traditional welcome mat. So if you're not familiar, if your audience is not familiar with what a welcome mat is, it's essentially a full screen pop-up that asks your visitors to give up their email address. But that's annoying, and that's, you know, it doesn't work very well. It gets the about 2% conversion rate. So I combine that concept with a simple survey, leveraging what are called micro commitments. So basically what happens is the welcome mat, the full screen pop-up hits, and you ask a very simple, low barrier to entry question, like, how did you hear about us? And there's, you know, three options: Facebook, Google, or other, right? And the person seeing this will say, oh, well, I heard about you from Facebook. And they'll click on Facebook, and then they'll click on next. And then the next question, if you want to, you can say, ask another very easy question, or you could just say, hey, great, thanks for letting us know that. You know, would you like to receive our newsletter or our whatever? You know, type in your email address below. So basically what happens is you ask for a very low barrier to entry question first, and get them interacting with it. And because they've interacted with it, they are far more likely to give you their email address. Right. So it's this beautiful thing that works every single time that I've seen. Whenever it's a fairly new piece of software. Lead Nibbler has about 40 clients right now. We're all seeing at least doubling of our conversion rates. One guy has seen a 10 times increase to his conversions. He used to get about 30 or 40 leads a day. Now he's getting 400. So He is very excited. And I'm also very excited for him because it's a proof of concept. It seems like it's working. So I don't know if that helps your audience at all. You can totally sign up for free if you like. Just need an email address, no credit card required, leadnibbler.com. If I can help, bring in more leads for you and how to sell your domain name or something like that, by all means, I hope I can help. So there you go.
No, that's good. No, that's good. So that's an interesting thing. So it's just leadnibbler.com, I assume.
That's it.
All right.
Is LEAD, in case they didn't know how to spell lead.
Exactly. So one of the things I want to touch on just real quick, because here I took a quick note here about you stating that you had multiple domains. And So about how many domains do you own that, I guess, redirect or that you use to promote your businesses?
That is a very good question. I don't know the exact number, but I can find out. I generally buy all my domains through GoDaddy just because I bought my first one there. So I end up buying all my domains through GoDaddy. So if that's a bad idea, let me know. I can certainly go through another provider. Let's see, if I say manage all domains, does it tell me a number? It's not in the hundreds by any means. I probably have somewhere around, I would say, in the realm of 30 to 50 domains, I believe.
Right.
So I'm sure that's probably pretty piddly to you in, you know, with your audience.
But no, I think it's actually, you know, what's interesting to me is just a number of gents like yourself, or just, you know, persons that are launching their business or have launched a business. What's most interesting to me is that the ability of, you know, I guess just going after different domains. And so oftentimes you just, you know, you hear an idea, you focus on that idea, you find one domain, you launch your business, and that's the end of the story. And that's not necessarily true, especially not true in your case. And so,
yeah, I have about 40. I just checked. So it's about 40 domain names.
Nice. Nice. And so do you still pick up domains from time to time as ideas come to you?
So that's what it is, right? It's when the idea hits, and if the idea is good enough, that I start to pursue it and I think of a name for it, I'm absolutely going to pick up the domain name. So it's not like I'm going out and buying domain names because I just think of a good idea and then think of a name and then go buy the domain. I'm actually really bad at thinking of names for products. So I have to actually start pursuing the creation of that product before I pick up the domain name. So I'm not too crazy in that I'll just say, oh, you know, it'd be great if we had an app that, you know, said, you know, does this in my life. And then, oh, what would a good name be for that? Oh, this would be good. No, then we'll buy that. You know, I'm not that crazy. So,
right. So you're more practical in terms of the approach of you're executing prior to purchasing the name.
Correct. Yes. For example, Lead Nibbler wasn't called Lead Nibbler. I used an old name that I used for a product ages ago called Survey to Sale. So I had Survey to Sale as a domain name, and I started, I just said, I'll just call this Survey to Sale because it sort of works. And then I decided, the purpose of this Lead Nibbler program is really to maximize leads. So I said, we'll rebrand it to Lead Nibbler so that the word lead is in there and it makes sense to people. So that's sort of how I got started with that. That's sort of the backstory, if you will.
Yeah, because when you said that, it kind of struck a chord, and I was like, man, well, I wonder if that's something that, you know, if you just saw, and I'm just throwing out an example, even though we talked about, hey, it is a trademark, but it's one of those things that if you saw javaprogramming.com and it was available at hand registration fee, it's like, okay, well, would you buy that?
Mm-hmm. Because it's, yeah, that's in my niche, but, yeah, no, if I wasn't a Java programmer, if I wasn't a programmer at all, yeah. If I saw a domain name that sounded, you know, pronounceable, easy to remember, that I personally wouldn't go out and buy it. So,
right.
But that's just because it's not my business. My business is not buying and selling domain names. So,
correct. Right. No,
wouldn't stand to benefit from it, I don't believe. So,
no, that's good. That is good. And so, wrapping up here, I mean, if you had to do everything all over again, what would you do differently, or would you do anything differently?
Well, the first most obvious thing that I actually said was I wouldn't have quit my job so soon. That's one thing that I keep going back to. I said, oh man, I wish I had stayed and been more patient. But that is a very recurring theme in my life, is a lack of patience. I like to go. Slow feels like it feels awful to me. So
painful death,
you know, so that's definitely something I need to work on personally. Is there anything else I would have done differently in my business? I don't know. Life is good. Life is pretty darn good right now for me. I'm living the dream, so to speak. I can work from home. I'm my own boss type of thing, if you can say that. Obviously my customers are now my boss. I just have a lot more of them. But no, I'm enjoying life, and I don't think I would have changed much else.
No, that's good. And that's good to hear, because, you know, for those of us that are, you know, striking out into business, obviously it's one of the things that you hear is, hey, keep your daytime job. And so to hear someone that has already crossed that bridge and they say, you know, I think I would have at least kept, you know, my job a few months longer, you know, that's encouraging. Obviously you're always fighting against it as the person, I guess you'd say, in the fire, if you will, of, you know, do I make the jump now or do I wait or do, but you know, you make the best decision that you can at the time, and
right.
You know, 2020 is hindsight.
So my piece of advice is don't forget about your business expenses, for the love of God. So what my plan was to save 6 months of expenses, which is sort of the bare minimum, in my opinion, is what you should save and have in the bank. But that was 6 months of personal expenses. I did not take into account all the money I'd be spending to grow my business right. within those 6 months. So my 6 months runway pretty much dried up after 2 or 3 months. So that's why wow. I went from excitement to sheer terror very, very quickly. So my one piece of advice is I would really recommend more than 6 months. That's, like I said, the bare minimum. And don't forget those business expenses, because they're pretty significant when you're getting started. So
right.
that's my advice.
So another question then, because obviously you have Lead Nibbler, you have Coders Campus, you have How to Program with Java.com, CraftyCoder.com. So having started
Professo.com, I have a whole bunch of other products that nice. I've never done anything with. Yeah. So
so having started these, you know, how would you, I guess, mentor someone or direct someone or advise them in terms of, you know, starting a tutorial website? I mean, is that something that they, you know, should it be a passion, or is it something that, you know, hey, as long as you're willing to go out and learn and research, then you can go out and, you know, create a tutorial site?
So that's a good question. Now, I don't know if I'm the best person to speak to this, because all the things that I do are because they are in my realm of knowledge and I'm good at them and or I am passionate about them. So right. my answer would definitely be skewed towards make sure you like what you're doing. That's only because in the last 5 years, I've been doing a lot of things in my business. I've been pursuing a lot of different avenues. I've been very, you know, the squirrel, look squirrel type thing. I change direction a lot. And I finally said, you know what, in 2018, I'm going to focus on the thing that I truly enjoy the most. And the thing that, like I said, I truly enjoy the most is programming. And so far, 2018 has been one of the most productive and fun years that I've had since I first started my blog back in 2012. So there's something to be said about doing the thing that you truly love to do every single day. It just makes me a happier person. 2017 was not a good year for me. And that's because I was split in all these different directions, and I was doing things I didn't like doing. For example, customer service. I'm good at customer service, but I don't like to do it, and it wears on you. So I finally took the leap and hired a customer service person to handle the bulk of my customer service issues. And I'm so much happier that I've done that now. So as cheesy as it sounds, I think it's cliche for a reason. Do what you love, because it really makes a difference in your life.
Wow. Wow. No, that's good. That's good. And it's one of those things, like you said, you can definitely tell the difference, even though, you know, we're, I guess, just barely into the second quarter of 2018. But mm-hmm. the fact that you can even notice the difference
it's huge. This
early. Yeah, it's definitely huge.
I mean, I noticed it mid January. I was like, man, I'm having a good time right now. You know, like I said, I nerd out with coding, but it's my happy place. I'm so much. So here's my last little, if this is, I don't want to go over time. What you look for is what is called being in flow. The easiest way I can describe what being in flow is losing time. If you can sit down at 9 a.m., start doing whatever it is you're doing, and then look up and realize you've missed lunch, you were just in flow. If you go from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. without even realizing any time has passed, you are in flow, which generally means you're either really good at what you were just doing, or you really like what you were just doing, or both. And for me, that is programming. I lose time with I can sit down and code, like I said, 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. or whatever, without blinking. And that time that I'm in there, I am so insanely productive that I truly believe that I am better than like four other coders combined when I'm in that flow state. So I think I operate at the superhuman level when I reach that state of flow. So if you can get there, if whatever it is that you're doing puts you in that kind of state, I think you're truly superhuman. And I would keep doing that as long as you possibly can, and find out how to make money off of that, because you're going to make money by doing that. So anyway, there's my little 2 cents for you.
Right. And no, you actually segued into to a good part, because that was the next question. The final question was around, hey, how did you go about making money? It's one thing to have a site. It's another thing to actually be profitable or turning revenue with it.
So tricky. it was tricky. I started with advertising, and advertising doesn't pay too well, depending on the platform. Podcasting and advertising works well. But blogs these days, people don't really respond to banner ads anymore. So I learned that lesson very quickly. And I decided that I needed to sell my own products. So I figured, hey, if I'm teaching people how to code on a blog, I might as well make a course. So I started with creating a course with video tutorials. I actually bought javavideotutorials.net. There's another domain name that I picked up.
Why .net?
Because the .com was taken. And I said, I just like that name. And that's sort of what I named my course. So I was like, oh, crap. Now I got to buy the .net instead of .com.
Was it developed?
I don't think it was developed. I think it was parked. And it was inexpensive domain. So I said, I'm not going to buy it. I just said, whatever, I'll use a .net. And it worked out fine for me. So I bought that domain and created my course and sold it from that domain. And I mean, it's slow. It was slow. There was hardly any sales at first. But what keeps you going is you get these very glowing positive reviews from people saying, Trevor, you're the best teacher I've ever had in my entire life. I don't know how you do it, but you make learning fun. And it's just, I don't know. I get these messages all the time. And I, like I said, I think that has something to do with do what you're good at and do what you love, because it just comes out in your work. I cannot say why I'm a good teacher, but every single one, I shouldn't say every single one, because obviously you can't please everyone. But the huge majority of people just love when I teach. So I don't know what it is. So I just do it. I went out, I did it. It was slow and very grueling and steady growth. But that's what it is. It's growth. Very, very, very slow growth over time. And here I am. I've replaced my salary as a programmer and I'm loving life. So, yeah.
Right. So did you try anything like AdSense or Amazon affiliate?
Yep. Yeah, they didn't pay very well. So the problem with my particular, I say niche, but I guess you could say niche, is programmers are cheap. Which is weird, very domain specific thing. Programmers, they get everything for free. Programmers, they don't have to pay anything really to be a programmer other than education. But even then, now with the advent of YouTube and that kind of thing, programmers are spoiled. You can literally learn how to become a programmer for free and you never have to use any tools, pay for any tools, pay for anything. And then you can eventually get hired and get paid to do your work. So programmers are cheap. So, I've gone off on a tangent. What was the original question? Sorry.
No. So obviously, I mean, and I think the connection there was that programmers are cheap. So therefore, like advertising with AdSense and Amazon affiliates really doesn't do the trick.
Yes. The other thing is programmers hate ads. They hate the corporate establishment ads. You know, I mean, no one really loves ads, but like programmers hate advertising and they let you know it. So advertising just was not effective and they really hated it. And then doing any sort of affiliate deals, there wasn't really any affiliate products to sell because you don't have to buy anything as a coder. So for me, in my specific niche, I had no choice but to create my own product. So I was kind of backed into that position and that's the only option I really had. So I chose it, right? So potentially ads could work for sure. And potentially affiliate sales. There's many people who made lots of money doing affiliate sales, but I had no other choice, no other options. So I went with the only one I had.
No, that's good. And so, cause I think that, you know, for each niche, it's one of those things that you have to figure out, is this one that's conducive for advertising? And if not, like you did, you made a pivot to go and create your own product or mm-hmm. your set of products that are kind of daisy chained together. And so I assume that, you know, that's exactly what you're doing in terms of your video tutorials, even in terms of just, the Java course itself. Now, have you considered any other programming language?
Yep, for sure. So I do dabble in other ones as well. I'm not as proficient. I've been using the Java language since 2002. So I've got whatever, is that 16 years? Yeah, 16 years of experience with it. So I'm very well versed. So that's really my forte. So the majority of my courses have a strong focus on that, but I definitely have expanded in other languages. I think I have 18 courses now that I offer. And that, like I said, slow and steady, that's been built over 5 or 6 years. Sounds like a lot of courses, but hey, when you have 6 years to build them, it's not too hard to build out 18 courses. So that's basically the plan going forward. Although, teaching it's hard to make a lot of money teaching in programming. And I tell this to my guys, my programmers that follow me, I tell them, I say, guys, I'd be making more money working as a programmer at this point than if I continued doing this teaching stuff. And then I'm sure they don't believe me. They probably think that I'm just saying that to, you know, make them
keep them out,
you know, but no, it's true. If I were programming today, especially in the States, I've been offered positions with Amazon and Google, I would be a huge bucks I could make in the States working at Google or Amazon. But the thing is, I really, at the end of the day, this is really what I want to do more. I want to have the flexibility to work from home and to do whatever I want, to make up my own schedule and to be on Alvin Brown's podcast. Like, this is a conscious choice. I wanted to do this. So, to me, that's worth more than money at this point. So that's my calling in life. And I try to express that to them and they probably say, oh yeah, of course he has to say that, but no, it's the truth. That's what I truly believe.
It's like, who paid you to say that?
Exactly. Right. Yeah. There you go.
No, and that's good. And so with that, man, we're out of time. So Trevor, thank you again for joining us today and sharing your story about how to program with Java.com and just the lessons learned about operating in exact match domains. So, man, thank you.
Yep. Take care, man. It was fun.
All right. And so thank you, listeners, for tuning in to Kickstart Commerce, where we share search marketing and domain name investing strategies to help grow your business. Last but not least, please subscribe to this podcast via iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Podbean, or however else you choose to listen to this podcast. Also, please visit kickstartcommerce.com and subscribe to our weekly newsletter. Thanks. And that's all for now.